20 years ago, I underwent a surgery on my sinuses, and the day after the operation, the surgeon called me and to ask how I was doing. And I told him my nose and my breathing were fine, but my left eye was just killing me. And his reply was that this made sense because during the surgery, unfortunately, he had accidentally punched through the thinnest place of the bone between the sinus cavity and the eye socket. Yes, I winced too. And when he did, he not only fractured the bone, but he damaged the muscles of my left eye, the result being that even after an eye surgery a few months later, my sight was affected permanently with significant double vision whenever I look either up or to the left. Yes, my days of catching passes in the NFL over my left shoulder were over. And what followed post-eye surgery were a series of exams and therapies. Lenses were shifted, dials were turned as efforts were made to improve my compromised vision. And that's, in a sense, what we've been doing here in worship in January, trying to shift the lens and turn the dials to improve the way that we see. And double vision is a helpful metaphor for what we're addressing, because so often, while we strive to see the world and one another through God's eyes, our very human way of seeing things from our own point of view often misaligns our vision, both blurring how we see ourselves and distorting how we ought to see each other and the world around us. So let's hear on this last Sunday of our January How to See 2020 sermon series, shift the lens and turn the dials once more as we look at this morning's text. It's from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 6, verse 22, read a moment ago by Tara and signed so beautifully by Ashley. And as we begin, what I'd like to do is to draw our attention to three separate words set out in the expanded translation of this verse, which is printed inside your worship guide there at the top as our centering text. And it goes like this: the lamp of the body is the eye, Jesus said. If your eye is in single focus, pure and sound, your whole body will be well lighted. This is the word of the Lord. So these are our words today, our three words. First, the word single, as in single focused. Second, the word pure. And third, the word sound. Single, pure, and sound eyes. Let's talk about each. First, single. What does Jesus mean when he uses the word single or single focused? Well, as you might know, the Gospel of Matthew was originally written in Greek, and the Greek word here for single translates as generous. So it appears what Jesus is saying to his disciples is that it's a generous eye which produces light and leads to a brighter, more joyful quality of life. So practically speaking, how do we do this? How do we take this on? How do we see 2020 with a generous eye? Well, let's try this. Think back for a moment to any disagreement that you've been embroiled in recently, or perhaps even one that you can foresee being embroiled in the year ahead. And think about this. There's a social psychologist. His name was Anatole Rapoport, and he had a versatile mind. He worked in the fields of mathematics, of psychology, game theory, and peace and conflict studies, and in his work, he developed something now called Rappaport's Rules, which are his three rules on how to disagree well. So here they are. You ready? Rule number one. Before disagreeing, you must first understand and be able to express your opponent's view so clearly, so vividly, so fairly, and with such understanding of its nuance, its merits, and its strengths, that when you finish expressing it back to your opponent, he or she is compelled to say, "Thanks. I wish I had thought of putting it just that way myself." Second, list any points of agreement you have with your opponent on the subject. Third, express anything you've learned from your opponent about the subject matter that you disagree about. And then, and only then, when you've done all three, are you permitted to rebut, to criticize, to engage with your opposition's position. Which sounds great. But how are we going to get everyone to do it? Well, we're not. But it's you and I. It's you and I who are followers of Jesus Christ. So it's incumbent on us to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. No matter what. Let's not just burn down each other's straw men. If we want to see with clarity in 2020, we need to work now to develop more generous eyes. Pure eyes. How do we maintain clear, pure, and undistracted eyes in this modern age in face of so many distractions and diversions? How do we make sure our attention is given to things that represent time well spent? Well, Tristan Harris has been called the conscience of Silicon Valley. And his message to all of us is this: we need to spend more time thinking about how we spend our time. Tristan's a Stanford graduate. He built and sold his startup company to Google at age 26, and Google was so impressed with Tristan that they hired him to become their company's first software design ethicist. However, after seeing the company close up, he left. Tristan left, uncomfortable with how Google's business model was, the way that it measured success by the metric of how much of their users' time on app and on site they could capture, hold, and then increase day by day, month by month, and year by year. So when Tristan left, he founded a new company called Time Well Spent, a foundation which encourages and funds and mobilizes support for tech designers who build software around the core values of helping us spend our time better. Tristan cites studies that show the average smartphone user spends more than 4 hours per day on their device, and that we check our phones an average of 150 times per day. And while he acknowledges that our eyes and attention are our own responsibility, he also wants us to know that there are thousands of engineers behind our screens whose job it is every day to fine-tune their algorithms to keep our eyes down, glued to our devices more and more each business quarter. You know, this week I've tried to use one of Tristan's many tips, his many hacks to combat their efforts with my phone. It's quite simple. You turn off your phone's color. Going to settings and setting your phone to grayscale strips out its invisibly addictive color reward such that then it holds just a little bit less luster and psychological hold on your nervous system, all the while not so subtly reminding us that what we see, all around us, when we look up and not down, is not only more important, but more real, more colorful, and ultimately the place where we'll find a more well-lit and joyful life. Perhaps it's an easy start this week to regain a less distracted, purer, and clearer set of eyes. Try it this week as we begin to follow Christ's direction, to treat what we give our attention to each moment, treating it as something that is sacred. Sound eyes. What do we think Jesus means when he uses the term sound eyes? Well, let's turn the dials just a little bit more to focus our vision with a quick test, a pop quiz about the world around us. You can grab a pencil from the pew in front of you if you like and write down your answers to these five questions. Let's see how we do. Question one. Where does the majority of the world population live? A, low-income countries. B, middle-income countries. Or C, high-income countries. Question two. In the last 20 years, the proportion of the world's population living in extreme poverty has A, doubled, B, remained about the same, or C, decreased by half. Question three. How did the number of deaths per year from natural disaster change over the last 100 years? A, it's more than doubled. B, it's remained about the same, or C, it's decreased by half. Question four. How many people in the world have at least some access to electricity? A, only 20%. B, 50%. Or C, 80%. And question five, the last one. How many of the world's one-year-old children today have been vaccinated against some disease? A, only 20%. B, 50%. Or C, 80%. Okay, you don't have to pass your answer sheet to the person next to you. We'll trust you on this. But here are your answers. One, the answer is B. Most of the world lives in middle-income countries. Two, the answer is C. Extreme poverty has been cut in half in just the last 20 years. Three, C. Natural disaster deaths have decreased by half in the last 100 years. Four, it's also C. 80% of the world has at least some access to electricity. And five is also C. 80% of the world's one-year-olds have been immunized. How did you do? If you did well, congratulations. If you did badly, you're in good company. It turns out that thousands of people across the globe have taken this quiz, and most do terribly. In fact, even experts in global development rarely score better than a chimpanzee would by choosing randomly. So, you know, we think about what's going on in the world, we often jump to thoughts of war and violence and shootings and natural disaster and corruption, believing not only that everything's bad, but getting worse year after year after year. While in reality, almost all of the good things one might use to measure human progress and human flourishing, life expectancy, immunization rates, literacy, access to education for girls, number of people living under democracies, access to electricity and safe drinking water, all of these things have gone dramatically up, especially in the last 40 years. While at the same time, almost all of the bad things one might use to measure human suffering, extreme poverty, infant mortality, hunger, famine, war, violence, pollution, nuclear arms, all are going down. And yes, yes, we still have a long way to go. Hear that. And we could go over a long and very accurate list of things that are going wrong in the world. There's still way too much preventable suffering going on. But developing sound and rational and reasonable eyes helps us counter the prevailing narrative that everything is spiraling downward and out of control. Some might say, well, yes, but isn't it good to be a little bit pessimistic? That God wants us to be on guard against being satisfied with the world as it is. Well, perhaps. But I think Christ's direction for us to cultivate sound eyes suggests that it's better to be accurate, to be acutely aware, yes, of suffering and injustice and crises, when they occur and where they occur, but also to be aware of what's happening to reduce them so that we can focus our energies precisely on those things. And likewise, you know, likewise, it's God honoring to cultivate sound and rational eyes, not just about the world, but about our own lives as well. And part of developing sound and reasoning eyes about ourselves is to build up a bulwark against our very human proclivity for what psychologists call hedonistic adaptation, which is just a fancy name for taking things for granted. That's what my mother called it. Because it's true, isn't it, that rather than experiencing a durable feeling of satisfaction from the many things that we receive and the blessings that God bestows upon us, we often so quickly begin taking them for granted, looking for the next thing over the horizon, something bigger and something better. You know, cognitive behavioral counselors suggest that we combat this very human tendency toward hedonistic adaptation, toward taking things for granted, by using something that at first glance is rather counterintuitive for a counselor to suggest. It's called negative visualization. That is, they suggest that we spend brief moments from time to time imagining that we've lost the things that we value most: our family, our health, our freedom, our jobs. And while these same counselors are quick to warn against ruminating on these images, on these ideas for long, they suggest that we keep just a little flicker of these visualizations, these images in our minds briefly, perhaps just a few times per week. An example. You find yourself walking pleasantly alongside a friend or a close family member, a simple walk. Well, think just briefly, just a flicker about a future time when you may not have the ability to walk or to be with the person that you're with. And just briefly consider how you might feel in that future moment and what you'd give to be on this very walk with this very person. Sound eyes, like generous eyes, like pure and undistracted eyes, recognize God's blessings and recognize the light that they shed on our lives. Well, a visit to the eye doctor is not particularly a fun thing to do. There's the puff of air in your eyes. There's the little letters that I can no longer read. There's all the questions, which is more focused, one or two? One or two, I'm always thinking I'm going to get that wrong. And then there's this one other test. This one other test with the equipment pushed up against your eyes, with one figure in your field of vision up and to the left, and another figure in your field of vision down and to the right, and the doctor asking you to speak up when the two figures merge into one. and the dials start to turn. There's a moment of double vision, and then slowly the two come together as one. You know, I think that's the very picture of what God intends as we follow these Christ's instructions more and more each day, our eyes becoming more generous, our attention becoming more pure, our outlook becoming more sound, until our vision becomes not just more like Christ's, but merges into Christ's, a single focused thing, one from which we hear God's voice saying to us quietly, "Now you see. Now you see as I see."